Welcome to the Nation Magazine Podcasts. You're listening to Nation Conversations, exclusive audio of Nation forums, events, seminars, and salons.
I'm Betsy Reed, executive editor of The Nation, and I'm delighted to be here today with Mustafa Bayoumi, who has worked with us on a special issue of the magazine, which we've called Islamophobia, Anatomy of an American Panic. We have a number of pieces in the issue, including an opening essay by Mustafa that attempts to sort of identify the manifestations of this panic in everyday life for American Muslims. So Mustafa, I mean, what are some of the examples that came to your came to mind when you first started thinking about this subject?
Well, I was thinking a lot about how ordinary life basically has become such a threat to many people in America, and you could say the American imagination of many. Ordinary life from everything from, you know, where Muslims congregate to how they are represented in the media somehow becomes threatening. So if you take a look at the reports about the NYPD, the New York City Police Department, basically spying on the local Muslim community here and beyond the reaches of New York City, you see that they're not following any criminal leads, but really what they're doing is just spying on the activities of ordinary life.
And what are some of the things that they found suspicious?
They found things like playing cricket was suspicious. They found things like a travel agency recommending Royal Jordanian Airlines was suspicious. They had all kinds of reports on restaurants and what kind of television shows were being shown on those in those restaurants, what kind of food was served on those restaurants.
Not to mention praying, right?
And exactly.
And you describe an anecdote in your piece about, is it a student of yours at Brooklyn College? You want to tell us about that?
Sure. He told me how, you know, he was very aware of these reports, and these really seemed to him to be more of a confirmation rather than a revelation, and that's widespread within the Muslim community. But what he told me was that, you know, having read the reports, and he noticed that in one of the reports, the NYPD noted that the Muslim students were praying four times a day, and the required prayers for an observant Muslim are five times a day. And so he was saying, oh, well, I guess five is worse than four.
Right. So you describe in the piece a worrisome trajectory. It seems like in the wake of 9/11, actually we've seen over the past decade an increase in anti-Muslim sentiment. Is that right?
Yeah. And in fact, it's not me who's saying this. It's really the polling data that shows this. If you look at some of the polls, some of the major polls coming out of, say, the Washington Post, ABC News polls, who ask this question annually, you'll see that the number of Americans who report holding some kind of prejudice against Muslims was around 39% right after 9/11, and it's climbed to about 50% now in a whole bunch of different polls. So it's approximately half the population will admit to harboring some kind of prejudice. And then I think that you also see some other interesting trajectories over the decade. You know, I think for one thing that you've seen is that there was a lot of concern around security initially, and that the way in which the community was received was largely as a national security issue. That narrative still holds, but I think that what's happened over the last several years is that you also have this narrative of suspicion just around culture and around the daily life of Muslims. So things like building a mosque somehow become very, very suspicious. Things just like the ordinary activities of shopping, of going to a cafe or going to a restaurant, the things that the NYPD was looking at, even just the way that our law enforcement agents are trained to think of Islam as a culture that they are opposed to is a worrisome development.
Given how few Americans actually have personal contact with Muslims, what role does media play in promoting these attitudes?
I think it plays an enormously important role, an enormously influential role. You know, I cite in the piece a poll that was taken recently by Time magazine, where they said that 62% of Americans, 62% of their respondents reported not having any personal contact with Muslims. So in other words, you know, a large majority of Americans don't know anyone who is Muslim. And yet I would say that almost everybody, if not everybody in the country now, has an opinion about Muslims and Islam. Mm-hmm. So how are those opinions formed if they're not formed through personal contact? They're formed essentially and primarily through media. So media coverage plays a very, very important role here. More important, I think, than with a lot of other communities where, because you have that daily contact, there's a way that you can counterbalance, you know, how you see a caricature on television with this person that you actually know. Well, that doesn't exist a lot for Muslims. And so media really shapes opinions in a way that it doesn't for other communities.
So one kind of sad parable is the story of All American Muslim, what happened with that television show. What do you think that suggests about, you know, what's going on here?
I think that's an excellent example of the kind of demonization just of ordinary life. Here you have a show that was sponsored by one of the cable networks, TLC, that was really essentially, I think, trying to illustrate what ordinary life for Muslims is like. And that is a necessary kind of representation, I feel, in the American media sphere, since so few Americans have daily contact with ordinary Muslims. And the show was relatively interesting. It didn't quite have the dynamics of a lot of, it wasn't say the Jersey Shore of American Muslim experience, but it had a lot of interesting elements to it. And it was generally well received. It got actually quite good critical commentary in the beginning. But it did not take too long that the kind of radical right mobilized around the show or against the show and started spreading an email message saying that the show should be boycotted because, as they said, the show did not portray the Muslim community in reality because it didn't show extremism. Right. As if extremism is the only real element of the Muslim American community, which is a ludicrous statement, a ludicrous proposition, and yet one that held. To the point where, in fact, two major advertisers dropped their advertising after that. That was Lowe's and Kayak.com.
Yeah. In this issue, we have a couple of pieces that look at different ways about the emergence of this virulent right-wing anti-Muslim, you know, attack machine, basically, including a piece by Max Blumenthal about some of the funding, where the money is coming from, and you saw that in the hysteria over the so-called Ground Zero Mosque, right? I mean, it's like, not only is this a mainstream problem now, but it's being driven systematically by a very organized network of groups, right?
Yeah, and I think that that's what makes it actually something that we have to pay a lot of attention to. This is not just a question of perceptions and attitudes. It's really a question of politics. It's how it gets made into a political issue, how it gets mobilized, how it mobilizes people, how people can exploit the fear of Muslims and the hatred of all things Islam in order to make political gain out of it. That, to me, is really the important part of it. You know, one from the Muslim American community, one could understand how after such a traumatic event as 9/11, there's going to be hostility. But the point really is not, it's about A, being treated fairly, and B, understanding how that hostility can then actually be exploited for political gain.
One of the most poignant points in your piece is that you cite a really surprising level of optimism in the Muslim community. How would you account for that in this atmosphere?
Well, I think that there's, two reasons for that. One is, at the same time, you know, that I cite that largely from a poll that that was done last year from Gallup. And what they found in that poll was that especially young Muslim Americans tend to be as optimistic now as their non-Muslim counterparts in the country, whereas a few years earlier, they were less optimistic. And so Gallup was saying, oh, well, this is a good thing because now they're on par with the same levels of optimism as the rest of the country. And yet in the same poll, it was striking to me that 48% of Muslim Americans reported personal discrimination within the last year. So half the community, that's an astonishingly high number.
Yeah.
And so how do you reconcile the fact that half the community reports personally being discriminated against in the last 12 months and they feel optimistic about their future? Well, actually, I think you can reconcile them by saying, well, things have to get better because
Right. They're
not,
Right. They
cannot stay at this level. And on the other hand, so that's one. And the other hand is that it's really important from my point of view to also express the levels of support that you do get from the country. If the polls say that half of the country are opposed to you, well, that means that half are in favor of you or not opposed to you. And I think that you do see that support coming from many important quarters And you see it coming from allies, you see it coming from political support networks. That's actually the substance of one of the pieces also in the issue. You see it coming from all different avenues. I think the fact that TLC would even produce the show All American Muslim is an example of that.
Yes, yes.
So I think those levels of engagement, of honest interest, have to be recognized, and so that we don't just look at this as a zero-sum proposition.
Right. Thank you, Mustafa.
Thank you.
Nation Conversations is a product of The Nation magazine and is available on iTunes. You can hear more podcasts at thenation.com/audio. Thanks for listening.